You are listening to CKUT Radio in Montreal, Quebec. I'm Joe Broaddrist, and I'm pleased to be welcomed on the phone this afternoon with Michael Berger. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you doing this afternoon? I heard you're getting rain.
Yes, I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. Yeah, it's a bit rainy, but it's spring here for a change.
Well, we're having wonderful weather up here, and we're enjoying it very much. So I wish you more sunshine in the future.
Thank you.
You are part of an organization called 911truth.org, and I was wondering if you could just tell my listeners a little bit about that organization, when it got started, and what the goals are for that organization.
Sure. 911truth was started about 2 years ago, coming out of a conference held and the first international inquiry into 9/11 held in San Francisco in March of 2004. And the mission of 9/11truth is to not just expose the truth about 9/11, but the lies and the cover-up about the events surrounding 9/11 in a way that inspires people and empowers them to work through whatever denial there is in understanding the truth and to hold people accountable ultimately. And that is what we are working towards, to seek justice and a redress of grievances for those who were wronged on September 11th.
There's a lot of different organizations, 9/11 organizations, but 9/11truth seems to be one of the largest. How many members do you have?
As media coordinator, I actually can't tell you that. I don't know.
There's thousands, though. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. There are, yes, tens of thousands. Yes.
What we've noticed in the past 6 months to 9 months, as we're seeing a lot of people who who are academics and scholars and scientists that are starting to speak out about this. Are you noticing that in the environment of 9/11?
I think, yes, there are many people who are speaking out now from all walks of life, from all around the country, and in fact, all around the world. And I think one of the things that's changing is there seems to be this rising awareness, at least here in the United States, of dissatisfaction with the direction the country is going in, dissatisfaction with our elected representatives. And so it seems that there is this upswelling of dissatisfaction that if we can tap into and direct to something empowering and positive, that maybe for the first time in quite a long time in the United States, we do have an opportunity to really change the direction of the country and to take back the country.
President Bush's approval ratings are probably the lowest they've been, right around 30%, and we're seeing that an upheaval somewhat of normal middle-class citizens that are starting to wake up and see that perhaps he's not leading the country in the direction that it was, people want to go in. Do you think that they're taking that and maybe translating it into a curiousness, maybe, perhaps, to look into 9/11 even more?
Yeah, I think as well as the president's low approval rating, Congress, I believe, is at a record low approval rating as well. And I think, that people are becoming much, much more open and are questioning the official story. And I think films like, United 93 that's just put out and the Hollywood films that are coming out about the events of 9/11 will actually, I think, facilitate people wanting to evaluate and question the official story, because there are so many contradictions inherent in the story. And as media coordinator for 9/11truth, I get calls and emails all the time. And recently, in response to Flight 93 specifically, I've had calls from people asking me, well, how can they put in the film that these people made cell phone calls? And I agree.
And there's no possible way that those phone calls could have been made at that time.
Not from 30,000 feet, when you have articles as recently as 6 weeks ago in mainstream newspapers here in the United States announcing trials that the airlines have put on with cell phone companies to install special equipment to make cell phone calls possible.
Now, you are one of the key people who were investigating and found an anomaly with the black boxes at the World Trade Center. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about that and the way that the government handled that?
Certainly. In 2003, several recovery and rescue workers self-published a book. The book came out before the final 9/11 Commission report. And in this book, one firefighter tells a story of being assigned by the chief to take federal agents around the site to locate the black boxes. And in his story, it's a first-person story. I spoke to the woman who wrote the book, and she had said all she did was literally transcribe what they had told her. She did not edit it for content. And he stated that he took these agents around, and they located three of the four black boxes. Well, at the time, there was nothing significant about that. But a year later, when the 9/11 Commission report came out, in a footnote, it contradicted this story by stating that the black boxes from Ground Zero were never located. And if you keep in mind that we were told that they found the box cutters, a passport, and we know they recovered hard drives, over 400 hard drives from various computers, one would have to wonder why they couldn't recover indestructible black boxes.
And it doesn't happen very often that they don't find the black boxes. Is that correct?
In fact, I don't think it's ever happened.
So this would be the first. A lot of firsts happened on 9/11, including the vaporization of entire airplanes. When you look at from the response that you receive at 9/11, what are maybe the four or five biggest things that stick out in people's mind and that make them question the events that happened on 9/11?
You know, that's really a great question. I would say, at least for the last year or so, what has become a real topic of focus has been the collapse of a third building on 9/11, a 47-story building, which in most other cities is, you know, considered a monumental building, if not the biggest in the state. And this building collapsed at 5:20, although it was never hit by a plane. It came straight down within its own footprint in about 6.6 seconds, and it looks like a classical demolition or implosion. And in fact, Dan Rather on 9/11 stated that looks just like a building that had those explosives planted in it to bring it down. And the odd thing about this is we've been shown the planes hitting the buildings, the fireballs, and the collapses of the towers, but the mainstream media in the United States never shows this third building coming down at 5:20. And in fact, journalist Mark Jacobson in New York Magazine and several other firefighters and rescue workers that I have interviewed last month in New York told me, and Mark Jacobson has published this in an article he wrote about 9/11 and the movement, you know, that he was there that day after the towers collapsed before Building 7 came down, and that he was told, you know, that building is going to come down either tonight or tomorrow. So the collapse of the buildings is a real focus of how these buildings could have come down in the manner that they did. I think some of the others are how the entire chain of command in the United States, the people whose duties were the responsibility for protecting and defending the United States, were all conveniently AWOL on the morning of 9/11. There were also various war games held on the morning that simulated the actual events and effectively crippled any air response. So most people want to know, where were the jet fighters that morning? We also really don't know much about the alleged hijackers. We were told very quickly who they were, but we were also told that later by the head of the FBI that maybe their identities were not quite accurate. And we also know now, through things like Able Danger and various other information that has come out, that various agencies had them under continuous surveillance. So how is it possible that they were able to do what they did if we know now they were under literally continuous surveillance by people within our own government? And then you have FBI field agents whose investigations were blocked, and who went public as whistleblowers and were subsequently fired for standing up. There are some questions that have been raised about the Osama bin Laden video in which he takes credit for the attacks. that we've never really established his authorship of 9/11. We were promised a white paper early on. That was never provided. The financial connections between the Pakistani, for example, ISI, which was a creation of the CIA, and the alleged hijackers was entirely ignored because it leads back to our own CIA. And unfortunately, Joe, I could go on like this for days.
And it does seem that the evidence is just so glaringly abundant. And I've spoken with several people about the events on 9/11. And there does seem to be also, while there is glaring information that just seems like it, you know, we would have to have another investigation, there's also things that are put in there and considered disinformation. And I know that 9/11 Truth has tried as best they can to try to weave through this disinformation campaign, which may or may not be coming from the government or from somebody who just simply doesn't want any more said about these events. How hard is it as an organization, and especially when you have so many members offering great information, but also maybe offering information that is meant to confuse people? How difficult is it to kind of weave through that?
Well, I think you've really focused on the, at this time, really what is the greatest challenge, which is how to distinguish what is fact from fiction. And I think if you know the history of, for example, COINTELPRO in the United States and various past campaigns by intelligence agencies to thwart any opposition to government policy, etc., the anti-war movement, civil rights, I think it's highly likely that they are working to provide a great deal of disinformation. And one such example would be there are groups of people who claim that the planes that hit the buildings in New York were faked on blue screen. And I think most people who maybe have not looked into 9/11 who come across that claim first, then not only dismiss that claim out of hand, but never come back or rarely ever come back to examine the real facts. So with 9/11 Truth, I mean, one of the things that we're always mindful of are what are the standards of fact and logic that we use so that we can avoid the dangers of promoting rumor or false claims. So that's one of the standards that we hold ourselves to, and we do our best to provide really well-vetted research and to not just publish whatever comes down the road as, quote, information, but to really distinguish ourselves for being a bit more rigorous with our research standards and what we publish.
And it does seem that in the beginning, perhaps 3 years ago, it was very easy for people, especially in forums, to automatically say, you know, use words like, you know, take off your tin hat or these kind of things, when right now that they really can't use that argument when they're faced with certain realities that are just no one can dismiss them. The fact that the official report omits entirely Building 7 would seem that it would almost require another investigation. How do you feel about that?
Well, that's actually one part of our mission, we feel, is to facilitate a truly independent investigation. But the real issue then is how do you go about having an independent investigation that has subpoena power? Because, you know, much of the information that comes out indirectly implicates many of our own elected officials. Because even if they were not directly involved, it would seem that they were directly involved in after the fact in a cover-up, since there hasn't been a true investigation. As you said, I mean, there are glaring contradictions, even in public, you know, testimony during the 9/11 Commission, where one question is asked and literally within a span of 10 minutes, a glaring contradiction emerges in testimony, and not a single commissioner follows that line of questioning and just lets it fade. And the American people and the families have never really gotten justice, have never gotten the truth. No one's ever been held accountable. No one's ever been held, nobody's ever been demoted. And yet many of the people involved in, for example, FBI obstruction were actually subsequently promoted. So the question is, then, how do we hold people accountable? I mean, this is an enormous challenge. And how do we get a real independent investigation that has some power to actually get to the truth? And that's one of the long-term projects that we at 9/11 Truth are focused on.
And part in doing that, you are holding a conference in Chicago from June 2nd to June 4th. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about that and who will be attending and what the goals of that are going to be?
Sure. June 2nd to 4th, as you said, in Chicago at the Embassy Suites, O'Hare, Rosemont. And this is an education and strategy conference. And how this differs from previous conferences that people may have attended on 9/11 is that we plan on emerging from this conference with a concrete plan of action and a strategy for how we accomplish some of the goals that we had just talked about and how do we accomplish our mission. And for people who are awakening or have been involved in the 9/11 Truth Movement, what can we do to empower our fellow citizens to work together to really rein in what seems to be a thoroughly corrupt government, and how do we get our country back? So the conference title is 9/11, Revealing the Truth, Reclaiming Our Future. And we ask people to join us in Chicago to come together so that we can strategize and build large coalitions to go out from this conference and actually have a plan of action to do what we need to do to hold our elected officials accountable, to seek justice for the American people and the family members who lost family that day. I mean, how is it possible that 4.5 years after 9/11, these family members still do not have a memorial where they can go and grieve or pray or be with their loved ones? And I think that's really quite shameful for the American people. To tell you a few of the speakers, we have physics professor, BYU physics professor Stephen Jones, William Pepper, Alex Jones, Ralph Schoenman. There's a long list. In fact, if you go to our website, 911truth.org, on the right-hand side, there's a banner that's 9/11, Revealing the Truth, Reclaiming Our Future. And you can see a list of the speakers. So I encourage anybody who's interested to meet us in Chicago and participate in creating the future that we want to share and leave for our children.
I've been very impressed in the United States over the past 6 months of people going out and speaking and creating films. And I want to speak about your film. You've created a film that you're going to be releasing soon. Can you tell my listeners about that?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I'm actually working on a series of documentaries, the first of which I'm releasing on the 15th on Monday, entitled Improbable Collapse, and it is a look at what happened in New York to the Twin Towers and the puzzling collapse of Building 7. And I have interviews, a one-on-one interview with Stephen Jones. I believe the first interview on film with Kevin Ryan, who worked for Underwriters Laboratories, and Jim Hoffman, David Ray Griffin, and Glenn Corbett, who is at John Jay College. And I attempt to present the information a bit less dogmatically than other 9/11 films, and I ask viewers to evaluate the evidence for themselves. I do not believe that we have proven why the towers have collapsed, but personally, from my own investigation and the people I've met with, you know, the question of Building 7 is really no longer a question. When people on the ground in New York, such as 20-year veterans of the fire department, tell me, you know, they saw immense fires in the building, they saw the damage in Building 7 after the North Tower collapsed and damaged it, and they did not understand why they were being told it was going to collapse, because no steel frame structure has ever had a total failure due to a fire. It's a bit puzzling, and so we examine this and bring out various schools of thought on what happened that day and present the evidence and allow the viewer to make up their own mind.
Okay, I've been speaking with Michael Berger, and he is the media director at 911truth.org. Tell us the name of your film again.
It's Improbable Collapse, and you can look at the information about the film at improbablecollapse.com.
There you go. Well, I thank you for joining me this afternoon. I thank you for holding these conferences and for getting this information out and informing the public in a great way of what's going on and what you're trying to do and why there needs to be a separate independent investigation into 9/11. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Joe.